Hydro-Québec's CEO, Éric Martel. The controversial New England Clean Energy Connect project would bring hydropower from the province of Quebec through Maine to Massachusetts. The provider of that power would be the government-owned Canadian electric utility, Hydro-Québec. Supporters of the project say it will bring much-needed green energy into the New England electricity market, replacing fossil fuel plants and providing relief for Maine ratepayers. Opponents argue it will crowd out other renewable power projects, harm Maine's environment, and simply shift hydropower electricity from one region to another, not contributing to an overall decrease in carbon emissions. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The CEO of Hydro-Québec spearheaded the company's push to export more electricity to the northeastern states. He's here to answer your questions next on Maine Calling. But first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A proposed New England Clean Energy Connect project aims to bring electricity from Canada through Maine to Massachusetts. The source of that electricity would be the Montreal-based utility Hydro-Québec. In the studio with me is Éric Martel. He is the president and CEO of Hydro-Québec. Éric, thanks for joining us today. I know I didn't say your last name properly, so why don't you say it for yourself? Introduce yourself.
Éric Martel, so I'm the CEO of Hydro-Québec, as you said, so thanks for inviting us this afternoon. Thank you.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Do you have questions about this project? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email, and please make it brief, to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. As I mentioned, Hydro-Québec is owned by the province and provides power not only for residents of Quebec, I understand, but also exports power to other Canadian provinces and the northeastern states. Describe the electricity generating infrastructure in Quebec that would provide the power for this New England Clean Energy Connect project.
Okay, so Hydro-Québec basically is a generator of electricity, but also we do the transmission and the distribution, and we have mainly our power produced with hydro power. So we have very, very little. Actually, 99.5% of our electricity is produced with water, which we are extremely proud of because it's clean energy. You know, so that water gets through the river, turn the turbine, and then we generate electricity like that. You were referring to our capability of exporting. So today we export about 15% of what we are producing. And clearly in the last 15 years, we've been increasing our capability in anticipating the climate change that we're all facing of a bigger demand for renewable product like hydroelectricity, like solar, like wind. And we wanted to be ready to be able to supply more export.
You've been increasing the capacity knowing that northeastern states will want clean energy.
Absolutely. So since 2003, we've been building 13 new dams. We have added 5,000 megawatts. Just in reference, the NESEC project is about 1,200. So we've built, and in Quebec, actually, we haven't increased our usage of electricity. So that's why today we're in a situation where we have that capability available for export, and NESEC is one of the projects that we are contemplating.
All right. This project is about bringing green energy to Massachusetts, but it's also on another level about the future of New England's electricity. Why, in your view, is it a better choice for New England to import hydropower from Quebec than to develop its own domestic green energy?
Okay. I think it's a very fair question that you're asking. The reality is we all have our geography. And if you look at, you know, New England, New York, you know, I would say the northeast of North America, we have the resources that we have. And we are very fortunate in Quebec that we have so much hydropower capability, because the reality is, you know, if we want to really fight climate change and get the fossil, you know, sources, you know, out in 10, 15 years, there's different goals out there. We're going to need as much as possible to put all the solar and wind power that we can have available to be able to be successful. But the reality is these two sources that I just named are renewable product, clean, but they are intermittent. And that's the main difference, you know, with our hydropower. Hydropower is also renewable, but it's always there. So I'll give you a very simple example. If you would be dependent on only wind power in the state here, the morning that the wind doesn't blow, what do? You have no electricity. And there's a solution of using battery, but it's very expensive. I'm thinking of regular batteries here. But if we all work together and connect our grid properly, we can use basically Hydro-Québec in the region as a battery for everybody. So I can imagine, you know, a day that there's a lot of wind and you guys are producing even surplus for yourself, that you can sell to us. You know, in the meantime, we increase the level of water in our reservoir. And then the next morning, if the wind doesn't blow, we can secure your supply so that you don't run out of electricity by using our hydropower, which is also clean. Because the alternative, if you only want to have a state solution, you know, you can use some of the hydropower that you have, but it's not going to be enough to displace all the fossil fuel, oil or gas, and any others.
One of the big concerns, though, is that this project would corner the market and stifle the development of other green energy sources. Do you dispute that?
I dispute that completely, because in my mind, you know, what can accelerate, you know, wind and solar is the presence of a source like ours that is renewable that can firm the system. So the more, as I said earlier, the more solar and wind that you can produce, you should do that, because then we're going to be there to secure your system if there's an issue. But I think it's the opposite. The renewable sources need to work together to come up with a complete solution. Okay, so we're not here today to say we're the only solution. We're saying you should put as much solar and wind, but there's a limit in the quantity you can put, because then you're going to have that intermittency problem. But our solution, you know, cope with the other solution of renewable, and then we can have a global solution to reduce and eliminate fossil fuel.
All right. Well, I understand on a lot of levels why Hydro-Québec wants the corridor to happen. And one is that it's an estimated $200 million in profits every year. Though for the state of Maine, there's a 145-mile corridor through the western Maine mountains. Why is this a good... I understand why it's a good deal for Hydro-Québec. Why is it a good deal for Maine?
Okay. So it is a good deal for Maine, and it's a good deal, you know, and I won't dispute that it's not a good deal for Quebec. It is a very good deal for Quebec. But so first of all, on the environmental point of view, this project is the biggest opportunity we have together to fight climate change. This is the equivalent of taking out 750,000 cars out of circulation the day we turn the switch on, okay? And that's very important to understand. So on the environmental front, you know, Maine can have a significant impact on fighting, you know, and everybody is going to be affected. You know, people that are on the coast here, you know, they have issue with the water, with the temperature of the water, with, you know, things moving up north because, you know, the water is too hot here. So if we fight climate change together, it's not going to be just this initiative. And I'm not naive and say that this is the solution to everything, but it is clearly a significant path in the right direction. In terms of benefit, in terms of dollar, the evaluation of the benefit have different form, but it's about $1 billion, okay, in the next 10 years of benefit for the people in Maine. So there'll be, you know, jobs and training created. You know, the investment is almost $1 billion to build a line. A lot of job in construction and engineering here in Maine will take place. There's tax benefit because, you know, the line is going to pay taxes to the municipality all around. There'll be some suppression of the price because, you know, Maine doesn't have its own system. It's a New England system. So when there's cheaper energy coming into the grid, it does suppression on the cost. And this will clearly help energy cost saving for the people in Maine. So I won't go through all the benefit, you know, because we've talked about charging station and all kind of other things. But we do evaluate $1 billion for the next 10 years. And that's a lot of money, and plus the environmental impact that the state can have, you know, which is going to help everybody.
A lot of the question about this has been whether this will be, I understand that Massachusetts will be able to increase its green energy portfolio by importing more hydropower. But how can you say that this will make a difference for global warming? Can you categorically say that, but for this project and under your current infrastructure plans and contracts, more hydropower will be generated overall and not just shifted from one customer to Massachusetts?
We get this question all the time, and to be honest, I'm not that I'm surprised that we get that question, but I think the people that, you know, would like that project not to happen have done a very good job in creating that illusion that we will be shifting power. The reality is that I just mentioned at the beginning, we've already pre-built capacity. Today, we're turning the turbine like 50, 60%, and we spilled water. Last year, we wasted the equivalent of the water that we're going to need for 1 year in NESEC because we didn't have a market to put it or enough transmission line. So, and the reality is I am investing right now, my company on the Quebec side, $600 million to connect with CMP here on this side of the border. And, you know, I would be the worst CEO in town if I would say to my board, I'm investing $600 million just to shift energy. It doesn't make any sense. So the reality why we're doing it is that we have water and turbine capability to turn and produce more renewable power. You know, we've built 13 dams in the last 15 years without, as I said earlier, any increase in Quebec in terms of demand. So that capacity is somewhere, but it's being pre-built. It's ready.
So you said last year there was this spillage that you had to spill water. That was electricity you could have provided if there were a transmission line to take it. How can that was last year, though. That wasn't the year before and the year before and the year before. Is there, we don't know what Mother Nature will do in the future, how much rain will fall in Quebec. How can we guarantee that there will be this excess capacity in the future?
That's a very valid question, and you know, it's normal. It's not a perfect science that we have exactly the same quantity, but when you look at it historically, it's pretty much the same, with a trend actually in the Northeast, because the planet is warming up. That's a reality, that we have more rain and more rain, and our experts are planning that we're going to have more in the next 50 years. But even if we're not planning on this, you know, the quantity some year can be lower, but our reservoir, you know, right now are full. We usually operate with our reservoir about half or two-thirds. So the reality is we spilled 10 last year, but we also increased the reservoir by 10. But it depends on the location. We were not able to store everything, so we had to spill some. So the reality is we've been increasing last year. We spilled 10 and we increased our reservoir by 10, so we had probably 20 that was available. And we already exported a record year last year at 30-some terawatt hours, which is a lot of energy. 10 terawatt hours is good for about 1 million homes. So that's a lot of energy that we have. And again, we've built that, and history shows that, you know, our company is turning 75 years this year. The water has always been there. There's years that there's a little bit less, but then the year after there's more. But overall, the average has been pretty stable.
Is this written into the contract that there needs to be an overall increase in clean energy provided by Hydro-Québec through this project?
So there is in the contract that we have with the distributor in actually there is some guarantee that's going to be over and above some of the number that we've committed to. So clearly, you know, the intention, as I said, we've built it. You know, we've spent billions of dollars in the last couple of years to build that capability to be able to sell it. And we're at a point right now where we say we're ready, okay? What we're missing is some transmission line, you know, towards those markets. So, yes, it's a good thing for us because we can sell that electricity. We already spend a lot of money getting ready for that. And at the same time, we believe, you know, that there is a definite win-win, you know, for the people in Maine, for the people in Massachusetts also, in buying that energy. First of all, it stabilizes your pricing because one of the particularity of the hydro product, which is not like fossil, which the price can fluctuate based on the market a lot, we gave a fixed price, you know, for the next 20 years in that contract. The other thing I need to say also is we're talking a lot about that contract for 20 years, but at the same time, that infrastructure is going to be good for 80 years, if not more. So as soon as the contract is done, then that infrastructure for New England is there. The proof of that, there's a line we call Phase 2 that goes to Sandy Point right now, close to Boston. That line has been built in 89. We had a contract for 15, 20 years on it. But that line continues to be filled every day at about 99%. So we do use those infrastructure when they're available. And again, these infrastructure will allow you to build more solar, more wind, because it's going to stabilize your grid.
I want to get back to this idea of, though, an overall reduction in or an overall increase in green energy. Is there a mechanism in the contracts as they are written today to verify that there will be an overall increase in green energy created by this project?
A mechanism, I don't think so. You know, I will have to check that and we can get back to you. But clearly there was a lot of discussion about, and at some point Hydro-Québec were ready to guarantee it. But we said, if I guarantee that it's going to be 20 terawatt hours, not 10, you're going to have to guarantee me the price also. And then, you know, this was an issue because the contract was only, and the law was only allowing in Massachusetts to guarantee for 9.45. But we put it on the table. We said, if you want us to guarantee the 20, we'll guarantee 20. And that's going to be over and above. So for us, it's very, very clear that this is going to eliminate, it's not shifting energy from one province or one state to sell here. It's really an increase in terms of the energy we're going to be producing.
We all believe, or many people believe, experts believe, that we're going to see a great increase in electric vehicles in the near future as people in Quebec buy more electric cars and the electricity demands go up in Quebec. Will you indeed be able to continue to meet the electrical needs of this project, the power needs of the Massachusetts and the New England energy grid, despite increased demand in Quebec?
All our forecasts, and you know, we're making those contractual commitments, understanding, of course, what will be the growth in Quebec, of course, on electrical vehicle. But let me say it. Hydro-Québec has always been a very responsible company. So we just launched last week a new company that's going to help people to reduce their usage of electricity. So it's going to reduce their invoice. It's going to make clean energy available for other things, which could be electrical vehicle. Because in Quebec, you know, a million vehicle is about 3 terawatt hours, which is not a lot for us right now in the size of what we have. And sometimes I'm not sure people also realize the size of our reservoir and our capability. Just what we have in stock in water today could supply New England for a year and a half alone, even if there's no rain. So the amount of energy that we are storage, that is in storage, is significant.
What would happen if Maine regulators reject this project? What would be the next step or the next route?
You know, it's a fair question. I think our energy right now is to make sure that, you know, we do a better job working with CMP, our partner here, and be more present in explaining the project. Because I think when we take the time to explain and answer people's questions as we do right now, for me, it's very difficult to imagine that people will reject the project. So our solution is really focused on this one, which we call NESEC. Again, you know, as I said at the beginning, taking out 750,000 cars out of circulation is the impact on the environment of this project. This is the biggest thing we can do together to help climate change, really.
All right. Well, my guest today on Maine Calling is Eric Martel, the president and CEO of Hydro-Québec. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Martins Point Healthcare, dedicated to providing the highest quality care and coverage to the people of Maine and New Hampshire, offering Generations Advantage Medicare plans. Learn how you can enroll at generationsadvantage.com. And Northeast Imports in South Portland, specializing in the sale and service of pre-owned Subarus. NortheastImportsLLC.com.
On the next Fresh Air, hearing in a deafening world, we talk with journalist David Owen. He says we take our ears for granted, abusing them with rock concerts, loud restaurants, and power tools. Most of us will lose some hearing before we reach retirement age. His new book, Volume Control, explores the mystery of tinnitus, breakthroughs like cochlear implants, and more. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. And a special thank you to Robert from Bangor for their donation of a 2007 Volvo. Donations to the Maine Public Car Donation Program make a big difference for your public radio station and in most cases result in a tax deduction for you. Towing is free and the great feeling you get from supporting the programming that you enjoy and count on is priceless. If you're wondering what to do with your car, please consider Maine Public. It's easy. Just go to mainepublic.org, click on support, and then the Maine Public Vehicle Donation Program. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking with Eric Martel, the president and CEO of the Canadian power company Hydro-Québec. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is Dylan Voorhees. He is Climate and Clean Energy Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Thanks for calling in, Dylan. Dylan, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, terrific. Thank you. Anyway, thank you, Dylan. I wanted to ask, I know that the Natural Resources Council of Maine has opposed this project, although you are committed to bringing more clean energy into New England. What are the NRCM's primary concerns?
Thanks, Jennifer. We have multiple concerns about this transmission project, and many of them have to do with poor siting of the corridor through western Maine by Central Maine Power, wildlife, habitat impacts such as brook trout and streams and deer yards, and recreational impacts on people snowmobiling, wilderness guides, and I think that's why we see town after town, expressing their opposition about this. That's a little bit less the subject matter for today, I know, but our concern about those on-the-ground impacts through western Maine is multiplied because of the lack of energy and climate benefits from this project. And as you've talked about, we really do need to shift to cleaner sources of energy. And to do that, we need new sources of generation. And we see the evidence pretty clear that this project is not tied to any new generation. And you've talked about that a little bit, asked some good questions. When we look at the record at the Public Utilities Commission, we see Central Maine Power testifying under oath, this transmission project doesn't require any new construction of electricity generation. And the question that Mr. Martel, I think, didn't quite answer to you is, no, these contracts in Massachusetts do not require additional delivery of hydropower to New England. And I can read you testimony, I won't spare you, from the Attorney General in Massachusetts that has really questioned the benefit of those contracts because they don't require Hydro-Québec and Central Maine Power to deliver any new power beyond what they're already delivering to New England. So that doesn't help our climate, and that means those impacts to western Maine are absolutely not worth it.
Well, Dylan, thank you. Eric Martel, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, Dylan. So first of all, I do appreciate the question. I think it's by talking about the project, and there's a lot of, I think, misunderstanding. And that's the reason why Hydro-Québec, we decided to come in here more often, probably in the next coming months, to support CMP in answering those questions. But the first thing I'd like to say is you mentioned, first of all, about the siting. So the project is about 145 miles. So first of all, it doesn't cross completely because it stops in Lewiston, which is north of where we are right now. It's 145 miles, and two-thirds of the project is existing corridor. So we're using for two-thirds of the distance, and that's how CMP has been planning the detail to make sure that there was less as possible, new area where we needed to do remove the trees and new roads, basically. So the reality is there's one-third of the remaining of the project that is going to use working forest. So forests that are already being worked on, by the wood company. So clearly, in terms of having a minimal impact, I think it's important to say 145 miles, two-thirds is in existing corridor, and one-third will be new area, but all these areas are working forest today. So that's the question you had on poor siting. In terms of energy, to be honest, I have a hard time to understand. It doesn't mean that you need to construct in the future. What I said is we constructed since 2003 a lot more energy, okay, in terms of making it. Actually, about five times what we need for NESEC, we've been building more energy and power in the last 15 years to be ready. So we already pre-built that. And right now the situation we're here is because we already built it. That's why we're spilling water and everything. So it is clear, okay, and I'm amazed by you know, that we haven't done a good job in explaining it, that some people think that, you know, this is not going to be additional energy. So we're not taking energy other than the energy we already have in our reservoir, turbine it and make it an electricity. So it is incremental. And Dylan is right. You know, when we had the conversation in Massachusetts, we said, okay, there was that conversation about, are you contractually willing, Hydro-Québec, to say it's going to be additional? And our answer was yes, okay? But when it was time to write the contract, we said, if we are asking us to increase it, then we're going to need to have security on the pricing, and they couldn't do that, okay? So it's not a question that we're not willing to do it. So we could have signed a contract and say, we'll say, here it is today, and it's going to be additional. But clearly, again, I would be the worst CEO if I would just build a $600 million project on our side of the border right now, you know, just to shift energy around. I don't understand why I would do that. So clearly it's additional energy and it helps climate change significantly.
Dylan, do you have a follow-up question?
Well, I guess I'm glad to hear that Hydro-Québec maybe wants to spend some more time down here helping folks understand projects like this. We were pretty disappointed that Hydro-Québec did not show up at the permitting proceedings here and was not a party at the Public Utilities Commission, was not a party at the Department of Environmental Protection and permitting. That's where the facts get ferreted out. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the claims that we have heard on op-eds or on the radio, that we don't think they're substantiated. They need to provide information under oath and information that the public and parties can scrutinize. And it's really troubling that that Hydro-Québec has not been a party to those proceedings and not been held accountable to the information that they're making claims about. That's the process. Okay. That's the Attorney General in Massachusetts based on the record down there. So okay. I think that's a missing component.
So Dylan, point taken. And I would be super happy. I'll invite you the next time I'm here. I'd love to sit with you so that we can go through this point and make sure that we all have the right information. But you know,
under oath?
I don't need to do that on the road, but I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
That's how we do things when we provide information to the Public Utilities Commission. It's okay. Under oath, and other people get to ask us questions in public in a transparent way, and we have to provide verifiable information. So it's not just a conversation or convincing me. This is a really big deal for the Maine people. And we think those kinds of claims should be substantiated in that kind of a transparent process.
Well, we'd definitely be delighted to have the conversation. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's Dylan Voorhees, Clean Energy Director with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Also now on the line with us, Anthony Buxton, Tony Buxton. He supports this project and is an attorney for Maine Industrial Energy Consumers. Tony, thanks for giving us a call.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
What? Tip the balance for you. Why do you support this?
Well, there are several reasons. The first request we made of CMP was that this project not cost Maine ratepayers anything, and it won't. It doesn't. And that's very important. Secondly, we decided to strongly support the project for two very important reasons. First, we New England, have shut down or are shutting down about 5,000 to 8,000 megawatts of older fossil fuel plants. And that's great because they're inefficient and they obviously produce a lot of CO2. But we have to replace that, and this is a chance to replace it with renewable hydroelectricity that is reasonably priced. And that's very important for our businesses and for all consumers. But the second reason is we analyze the facts of the route, for example, and the impacts it would have, and certainly it will have impacts. But the argument that this is some kind of despoilation of a wilderness is simply false. It has not been substantiated. I've participated in the PUC, the DEP, and the LUPC proceedings for my clients, and the case of the opponents is either invisible or extremely weak. It's there certainly will be impacts, but this is a working forest, and the alternatives are just as damaging or as not damaging, if you will. In order to produce power, you need transmission lines and generation. And this is, after lots of analysis by Massachusetts and others, probably the least impact that can be had to replace those dirty coal and oil power plants that we all want to get rid of.
Tony Buxton, thanks so much for calling in. Before we let you go, do you have any questions for Eric Martell?
Mr. Martell, I guess what I would ask you, I was surprised to learn that we have two interconnections from Maine to New Brunswick of transmission level interconnections for grid reliability, but Maine has none to Quebec. What do you think the benefits of having that kind of interconnection to Quebec would be for the consumers of Maine?
But first of all, there's a lot of benefit having those connections. As I said earlier, it gives us flexibility. And flexibility in a world where we're going to be moving towards more solar, more wind, you need to have a secure system by other sources that are not intermittent and present. So having those connections all together, you know, as I said, will allow you in Maine to put more solar, more wind, and we'll be securing the system if needed with a clean source. And that's the main difference. So we do that with Ontario. We do that with everybody pretty much. In the New England system, actually, we do that. But in Maine, you know, we would have that connection clearly with you now, which will go straight to Lewiston. And again, that asset's going to be available for the next 80 years, and we can all benefit of that.
Tony, thank you so much for giving us a call. Tony Buxton is an attorney for Maine Industrial Energy Consumers. I'm going to go to an email here, Eric, that many people are asking. This one's from Paul. I would like to note that Hydro-Québec is not mentioning the growing research on dam reservoirs giving off large amounts of methane gas, which is 30 times worse for global warming. How does he claim that hydro is clean energy in light of this?
Okay, that's an interesting question, and I have studies at Hydro-Québec with, you know, we have 175 experts in environment, a lot of PhD in biology, and we've been studying methane and impact, you know, of our reservoir. And again, it's true, you know, any sources actually of production of electricity is producing emission. Clearly, you have the fossil fuel that are producing a lot. Then I would say solar is kind of in the middle. Actually, solar is producing more CO2 than either a reservoir or a wind power.
How is that?
Because of the construction of the cell, and then you need the disposal after 15 years and everything. So none of the sources are 100% clean. And we need to be mindful of that and remember that. So in all transparency, a reservoir is producing more emission than a run to the river, which is a production just through the river when we put reservoir. Because the first 5 to 7 years when we put water when there was not before to create the reservoir, yes, there's a production of different gas, but it's very small, very little compared. And after 7 years, it's gone. It's like a lake, basically. So we've studied that, and it's proven in terms of the quantity. We've been studying that for 50 years. We've measured that, and especially the reservoir in the type of forest that we have in Quebec, in Canada, you know, is after 5 years, the emissions are pretty much done. So, but it's true. But you know one thing, and you need to a comment that Mr. Buxton said earlier. I think we need to be transparent with ourselves here. There's, you know, every project will have downside and you know, good side and some that are more difficult, pros and cons. Clearly, when I look at this project here, I will admit there is downside. Okay, there is always downside to any project. But the number of positive things, we offset, you know, the number of negative ones. You know, we can be trying to bash on a project, but I would challenge, you know, the people at Conservative Law Foundation to bring me a project on the table that has more positive impact on reducing emission than this one. And I'd love to discuss that. But right now, I think, we think, and our partner at CMP, that this is the biggest thing Maine can contribute in reducing emission and also helping in stabilizing price in this region.
We'll go to Ben, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Ben. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I know you've touched on wind a little bit in the state, and will this project help wind and other renewable development? And if so, how will it do that?
Yeah. So my answer to you, Paul, thanks for asking. Absolutely. The answer is absolutely. In Quebec, you know, we've installed 4,000 megawatt of wind power. And we've been able to do that because we had the renewable source of hydropower to firm it. So there is morning that the wind doesn't blow, as I said earlier, and we can replace by a renewable firm product, which is water. But, you know, I can see a day if instead of looking at it by state or province, if we all look at it collectively, our you know, portfolio of energy to produce electricity, you could install here as much as possible solar and wind. And in the morning, if you guys are producing a lot, we can even buy it from you in Quebec, store some of that energy. And when you are low on production, then we can supplement, you know, the production that you're missing. So this would be the better use of the energy energy portfolio available in the region, and if we all work together. So, but having those infrastructure like NYSEC is the base to do that. So clearly there is a lot of potential here for solar and wind power in Maine. There is also some in New York. We also have some in Quebec. And I think that we should all work together to maximize what we can do collectively. But clearly those transmission lines will be necessary to secure the electricity supply here.
Ben, thanks so much for your call. We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We're speaking with Hydro-Québec CEO Eric Martel. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from HealthReach, offering local, affordable health care at health centers throughout central and western Maine. HealthReachCHC.org. And Wood & Sons, committed to providing high-quality, sustainably sourced wood pellets made in Maine. Learn more at woodandsons.co.
When you hear those statistics that tell you the oceans are warming and you wonder, where do those numbers come from?
30 centimeters.
Down.
This is where, from scientists measuring precisely what's happening in the Arctic and what it could mean for all of us.
If lobstering was gone or fishing was gone, my community is gone.
Meet people working to figure out the future of the Arctic. Listening to the Arctic from the National Science Foundation.
And you can join us for that program after Maine Calling at 2.
Amazon has lost a massive defense contract to Microsoft called JEDI. It's the project to move the U.S. military to the cloud. Now Amazon is expected to go to bat with the Pentagon over this decision.
A year ago, there was an 80% chance Amazon's going to win the deal. They were popping the champagne, getting ready to win.
What happens next? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon between 4 and 6:30 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Eric Martel, the CEO of Hydro-Québec, talking with us about the power company's plans and how they will affect Maine. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. On the line with us now is Elizabeth Caruso. She is first selectman for the town of Caradunk and has been an intervener in the various public proceedings regarding the CMP corridor project. Liz, I understand you are not convinced that the corridor project is a good idea. Tell us what your opposition is, and tell us if you have a question for Eric Martel.
Sure. Well, thank you so much. Yes, again, as Dylan said, I was, you know, quite frustrated that Hydro-Québec is talking now to the media but was not at the table to provide evidence and be available for cross-examination at the PUC proceedings. It's important that we have, you know, evidence under oath that we know to be true. Also, some of the concerns that, you know, we have is obviously the global reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, not just reductions in Massachusetts. The concerns that, you know, this power corridor would do for through Western Maine is troubling to pretty much two-thirds of the Maine residents and Maine citizens who have come out against this project. And, you know, the 1,200 megawatts that would flood the Maine power grid, it would suppress the development of new renewable energy generation in Maine. In contrast to Hydro-Québec's, market switching strategy, that we could actually lower greenhouse gas emissions and provide more local jobs and economic benefits if we had Maine-based renewable energy generation. It's also troubling that this flooding of the Maine power grid would close two-thirds potentially of the biomass industry and threatened to close Maine's natural gas plants. There's a lot of talk about, you know, from CMP and Hydro-Quebec of all the benefits to Maine citizens, but in reality, there aren't that many jobs, and in comparison, Maine citizens would be losing jobs.
Sure. Liz, what would you like to ask Eric Martel?
Sure. So it was just last winter that Hydro-Quebec had asked its customers to conserve energy and lower their thermostats. And Hydro-Quebec has stated that it is not building new hydro facilities to fill the contract for Massachusetts, and it won't guarantee that it would not shuffle its resources. Why won't Hydro-Quebec guarantee in writing that it has the capacity by promising to fill this contract with new incremental clean power not taken from other New England, New York, or Ontario customers?
So the good news is we did guarantee in the contract with Massachusetts the 9.45 terawatt hours, which is the quantity of energy we're going to be delivering in a year. So clearly, I think, first of all, I thank you for your question because it allows me to explain, you know, there is peak hours, a couple of hours a year where we go to maximum, but this is a couple of hours a year. The rest of the time we use our grid for about 50-60% of the capacity that it has. So clearly that surplus and that availability is there. And, you know, you were saying about, I think, and I will repeat it, and I really mean it. You know, I told my guy, I said, we need to answer the question. I have nothing to hide here. But the reality is with a better source of supply, like hydropower that can secure your grid, there'll be not lose of job here. We should be building in Maine, I would say, new solar and wind plant. So I don't understand why how people make that relationship, to be honest. This is somebody's going to have to explain that to me. But clearly, if you have something that can secure the grid, you should be able in Maine to produce more wind power and more solar power if we all get organized properly. So that's definitely one thing that we need to do. And in terms of, you know, the corridor, as I said, you know, is going to be 145 miles. Two-thirds of the corridor is existing transmission line today. The other third is area where it is already a working forest. And, you know, one of the things we do in Quebec, you were talking about the skidoo industry and the snowmobile industry. The best area to do snowmobile is using those transmission line, actually, in Quebec. People pay to be able to use those transmission line. So I guess, you know, and again, and I apologize earlier, I made a mistake. I was challenging Conservative Law Foundation. I should have challenged because they are supporting the project. It's Natural Resources Council in Maine that is against it. But my challenge was towards them and said, okay, guys, we're coming here with a major project that can have an impact on climate change. And we're all talking about little things left and right. But and again, I'm transparent with you. There is always downside to any project. But if you look at the big picture, I don't think we can miss this one. And please come up with a better one if you have a better one and work with us on getting this one done. But I feel that we are, you know, everybody's looking at his own thing in his backyard. But if you look at the overall benefit of this project for Maine, it is $1 billion benefit in the next 10 years, plus the contribution to climate change, which is also going to help the state of Maine.
Liz Caruso, thanks so much for calling in. Elizabeth Caruso, first selectman for the town of Caratunk. We'll go to Jim, who's calling in from Goose Bay, Labrador. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Hello. Hello, dear. Yes, we have a real problem with the hydro. It's touted as clean. It is not. It emits methane. And when the flatlands and the reservoirs are flooded, we get a great spew out of mercury that goes on for years. And, well, we're convinced that this is not a clean source of energy, as is the sun, the wind, and the tide. But a big sticking point for us is not so much for Quebec. I hear your guests. They have an 8 million population and will support subsidizing anything. But when hydropower coming from Canada is subsidized by some province like Newfoundland and Labrador, we simply can't afford it. We just can't afford that.
Jim, your phone call is breaking up, but I think we got the gist of your concern about other provinces subsidizing what Hydro-Quebec is doing.
So first of all, I'm not too sure what subsidizing we're talking about, because Hydro-Québec, you know, is owned by the government, but we have our own balance sheet and we have no subsidizing. You know, we borrow the money we need and you know, we are selling our products. So I'm not too clear here. And in terms of mercury presence, you know, I have studies, we'll make those studies available, but clearly it shows that there is a bit of mercury in the beginning, but it's all to acceptable level, and they disappear after a couple of years after the reservoir has been filled. So, you know, there's no risk for health. It's been looked over and over and over. And again, you know, I'll make those things available anywhere.
All right, Jim, thanks so much for calling in. We'll go to Torbert, who's calling in from York. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Good afternoon, Jennifer, Mr. Martell. Some of my points have been touched upon, but the historical, the beginnings of Hydro-Québec's building of these dams in the 70s under Premier Bourassa contained a fatal flaw, which was that at that time Canada had no environmental review to speak of. So the structure of the project overall didn't take in, you know, if you look at it as the damming of the last free-flowing rivers in the Great Northeast, the destruction of the culture of the Cree Indians, who were the last hunter-gatherers in North America. As the gentleman from Labrador brought up, I don't accept Mr. Martell's assertions about methane going away. They basically didn't cut the forest. They just drowned the forest. And that drowning is going to continue to decay and release methane into the atmosphere indefinitely, and also methylmercury. So that is another way that it destroyed the Cree Indians that can't eat the fish that were the basis of their
Okay,
culture.
Torbert, thank you. And you know, many of the points that Torbert is making have already come up on this Main Calling program, but we have not yet discussed the concerns, and other people have them as well, the Hydro-Québec dams on the native population in Quebec.
Yeah. So first of all, and you know, I will admit it, it's true that, you know, 50 years ago, we didn't do the thing the same way we're doing them today. But I think, you know, the proof of that is yesterday, you know, we were recognizing, you know, one of our premier that passed away 10 years ago for an agreement we made with the Crees in 2002. And the Grand Chief of the Crees was there yesterday, very complimentary. And the actual Grand Chief of the Crees was with me, actually, and our actual Prime Minister, to compliment, you know, the way that Hydro-Québec has been doing project since, you know, this agreement took place. So clearly the community of the Crees are partners now. So I think what, you know, the person that just called was referring our old stories that, you know, probably took place like 40, 50 years ago. And I'd love to see any of the study that he's referring to. So a lot of talking, okay? But I think when we gather and bring this to facts, you know, and people look at it, I think we have to be very careful in what is being said.
We'll go to Frank from Falmouth. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Mr. Martell.
Thank you.
I'm struck that over the past, you know, decade or more, public policies in Maine and in states around the country, probably around the world, have really been focusing on trying to harness market incentives for investment in clean energy. And here we have an example in this project, it seems to me, and I welcome your reaction to this, Mr. Martell, that the markets are responding. We've created these public policies to incentivize the creation of this clean energy generation and transmission. And here it is, it's coming to fruition. And that there's a certain sector of folks who are decrying that somebody's going to make money from it, when, of course, all along, that was the very purpose of the public policy. Thank you. I'll take your response offline.
Thank you. So clearly, you know, the energy world is in a transition right now. And I think, you know, policies are sometime following and policies are taking are falling in place. But clearly the reality is that, you know, the way we were doing things like 10 years ago and the way we're going to be doing things in the next 10 years are completely different. So we are shifting towards a more presence of renewable that creates less emission for obvious reason to fight the climate change. And at the same time, you know, those sources that we are shifting to, which is solar and wind and hydropower, are extremely competitive now in terms of pricing. I remember wind was extremely expensive at the beginning and solar too, but today they can compete. The difference is they are intermittent source, so we need something to balance the grid and make sure you guys have electricity and you have a reliable grid, because we don't want the people in Maine to suffer from, you know, a grid that doesn't serve their purpose. But it is important that we do all work with the solution we have in our region, and that policy are falling in place to make sure that, you know, we're going to deliver the product that you guys need.
All right, Frank, thanks so much for your call. We have a couple questions coming in wondering about the free flow of water into the Gulf of Maine. How do Hydro-Québec's dams affect the fish population in Maine, in Quebec?
Hmm. You know, I was talking about our environmentalists at Hydro-Québec. We have 175 people in environment. A lot of them are bio-PhD, and we have people that are PhD on pretty much every type of fish that we have in Quebec. So and birds and all kind of you know, so we are very, you know, severe with ourselves in terms of making sure that when we do construction, we do protect salmon, we do protect, you know, the different type of fish. So we are investing a lot of money when we build a solution to make sure that we will minimize or have no impact, you know, on those type of fish or birds or any other.
All right. So I got an email from Amy. Does Eric Martel feel as though the state of Maine should vote on the proposed corridor in a statewide ballot?
Yeah. But I think, you know, if it's needed, I'm all for democracy. I'm just, though, very sensitive that we're going to need to have a dialogue that is open and a dialogue that people are listening to each other. And if that's needed, that the people of Maine needs to vote for that, that's fair. I have no problem with that. So we'll see what's going to happen. But the reality is, I think, you know, and shame on us, we've probably been absent a little bit in the last coming months. And some people are taking a position which, you know, I respect, but at the same time, I think it's tainted a little bit, you know, doesn't have the overall scope. Again, this project is a significant contributor. The biggest thing that I can think of right now in terms of fighting climate change, again, it's the equivalent of taking out 750,000 cars out of circulation overnight. You know, please find me another plan that can do that. I don't know any.
Well, Eric Martel, thank you so much for joining us today on Maine Calling. Eric Martel, the president and CEO of Hydro-Québec. John Keimel ran the board today. We had help from Maine Public's Fred Bever and Susan Sharon. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.